probably a couple of months ago, and we talked about this project and what some opportunities might be. And the unique thing is the fact that it's got a lot of variety. Part of it's the design with this divergence for maintenance energy. Part of it's the outreach process that we're going through. And then part of it also is this social science aspect. And like Rod said, he's not a geneticist. I'm not a geneticist. And especially, I'm not a social scientist. So hopefully there's no other social scientist in the room. We left the folks that we're participating with or partnering with at the University of Idaho in Moscow. J.D. Wolfhorst and Stephanie Kane are the other two co-authors on this. And then Larry Keenan at the Red Angus Association has been very helpful. And as Rod said, it's a great relationship. As you can see on the bottom here, it's not on the USDA funded, but it's also sort of a combination of extension with research faculty, and then also a breed association. So it's a really good model for the industry. As Rod pointed out, these are the five key project objectives. I'm really going to focus a little bit on how we're going to do number five, which is educating producers about the selection for feed efficiency. And so one of the things we felt was important was to document where producers were today in terms of their knowledge or understanding or use of feed efficiency, particularly as we sort of speed up the process of selecting cattle based on RFI or even collecting RFI data, how we can go about producer education. So to get that accomplished, one of our actual research objectives was to establish baseline measures of producer perceptions about the perceived unique benefits and our costs associated with residual feed intake, and the efficacy of outreach programs in conveying this information. And any of you who have been involved in getting federal grants these days, one of the key things you have to do is document impact. And so a great way to do that is to measure something beforehand and measure something afterwards. And so that's somewhat, in a nutshell, what we're looking at. This is kind of the before snapshot of really what producers, what's in producers' minds. So we partner with what's called the Social Sciences Research Unit at the University of Idaho. Most universities have such a unit, and they conduct surveys of ag producers, consumers, public opinion polls, generate baseline data. They can do follow-up studies, document impact, document economic impact. So there's a variety of things that they can really bring to the table in terms of data sets. They'll do mail surveys, telephone, person-to-person, focus groups. They've got people that speak different languages, so they can target different groups. So it's really something, if you have a chance to get involved with some sort of social sciences to understand producer perceptions, it's a really good thing to do. They use something called the Dillman method, which is this very proven method of doing a mail survey where a survey is sent out with a letter. 1 week later, if there's no, I guess 1 week later, irregardless, they send a postcard. If the survey has not come back in 2 weeks, they send another survey and a letter. And then also to make sure that there's no bias due to certain producers or certain people responding or not responding, they do a subsample telephone calling of people that did not respond to sort of at least get some baseline data from them. So what we did for this project is in January to February 2008, we mailed out a 35-question booklet, and we used, and this is one of the hardest things to do, is find the sample population that you're going to evaluate from. You can try to get a set of data from the National Agricultural Statistics Service, for instance, but you can never get any names or anything. You can basically rent their mailing list if you provide everything to them. It's very, very expensive. And theoretically, we could have mailed to 77 beef producers in Idaho or whatever states we wanted to. We went the route of compiling three data sets, databases. One is the Idaho Cattle Association membership, since it's an Idaho-based project. We also used the membership of the Red Angus Association of America, and then also the bull buyer list of the Red Angus Association of America. And that's generated when bulls are transferred from the seed stock producer or the member to a producer. And so that's a free transfer when it's in the total herd reporting system. So together we had about 8,000 names in that. Eventually we sampled from that population to get 1,888 producers. We mailed those out and had about a 49.9% response rate, which, as if any of you have seen surveys or done them, to get nearly half of them returned, and this is a 35-question written survey, so it's not something you do in a minute. It would take probably 15, 20 minutes to complete. So we were very impressed, and it's pretty equally represented across these three different data sets. This is basically the survey that we sent out. This is kind of the shrunk version of what the questions were, and that's really a crucial thing. Most anybody can do a survey, and you can get data back, but it's really hard to get information from that. And it's really crucial to write these questions in such a way to force the person filling out the survey to complete it to provide you with data that you're looking for. So what we the general survey question areas that we asked about was background information, type of operation, breeds, location, numbers of cows or bulls, marketing methods. And the producer would be age, how much education they had, years in the business, average price paid for bulls, try to get an idea of how many tons of feed that they raised or purchased, especially when we start talking about an economically relevant trait, something like feed intake. We then also looked at the use of genetic prediction data, some data that they use today, what they would like to use tomorrow, and then also prioritization of traits for selection of bulls that they purchased or used. And then we more specifically looked at areas related to feed-to-gain ratio and residual feed intake. As you know, there's sort of this transition of using one measurement to the other one. So we wanted to know what their knowledge of, what their willingness to collect data on, for instance, RFI might be. And we're trying to get an idea on willingness to pay for RFI evaluation or feed efficiency evaluation. We've just kind of scratched the surface on that. So the demographic profile, for the most part, the majority were commercial cow-calf producers, combination of both seed stock and commercial, and then about 13% seed stock producers. 54 years of age was the mean age. Mean number of years in the operating the ranch, 28 years, which I thought was pretty impressive. To be really dealing with long-term producers, 46% have a college degree or higher. This is the regional distribution. As you know, it's a little bit weighted toward the northwest because Idaho is involved, and then also it's a little bit weighted based on where the Red Angus breed is located, which tends to be sort of Montana, Northern Plains type of area. So there's a little bit of a more upper Midwest, Northwest, North Central regions, but we feel like we have good representation from across the country. So some of the characteristics, just to go through these fairly quickly, a little over 200 cows, about 17 bulls, breed types used, vast majority British only, which would make sense if we're sending this to Red Angus breeders or bull buyers, and then also that's not the only people that received it, since the Idaho Cattle Association membership would often have nothing to do with British breeds. Some mixed British Continental, and then a very small percent only Continental or Indicus cattle. We also found about $2,600 was the average price paid per bull. And then interestingly, we just asked them, how many tons of hay do you purchase and how many tons of hay do you harvest? Over about 900 tons of hay. If you go back and look at the number of cows versus the number of tons of hay, you're looking at over 4 tons per cow, and that's probably not very sustainable. So it'll be interesting to sort of tease out there if some of this hay actually that was harvested is actually sold or not. But some of the key goals of this survey was to document these current selection priorities, determine awareness of feed-to-gain ratio or residual feed intake, and then initiate this evaluation of willingness to pay for RFI data, or really ultimately try to predict the willingness to adopt or use something like residual feed intake as a production practice. So I just cut and pasted the questions up here, and it may be hard to read in the back, but just so you can see exactly how we worded them and what the answers were, and then the next slide is basically the distribution. So this first one is basically genetic prediction information currently. So what types of genetic prediction information do you provide to your buyers if you're seed stock, or what types do you what types are currently provided by your seed stock supplier. So basically, are you getting raw measurements like birth weight, weaning weight, ratio data for those same traits, EPDs, productivity of related animals, written or verbal comments of the seller, genetic markers, none of the above. And we followed that up immediately with the next question that said, what are you not getting but you would like to get? So the previous one was, what are you getting or what do you use? The next one is, what are you not getting but you want to get? So this is really what's provided now. Raw data, ratio data, EPDs, related animal data, seller's comments, and genetic markers. And kind of see the scale here. You know, vast majority of producers have receiving most of these things. Genetic markers is somewhere around 16 or 18%. Then I just put up here on top of this one, this is what these producers would like to receive, or something that they don't get now but they would like to receive. So raw data, ratio data, EPDs. So they're basically saying they don't really want that many more EPDs. They certainly don't want any more ratio data or raw data. But the really interesting thing here is the amount of genetic markers that they seek, or the genetic marker information that they seek versus what they get today. So, and obviously that's a fairly interesting point. I think we all would sort of agree with that and realize that's makes sense. But at the same time, it's pretty important that these markers are understood and used properly, which we've all been talking about for the last 2 days, before there is widespread use and adoption of them. So probably pretty encouraging to some of the sponsors of BIF, but at the same time a little bit unsure for some of those of us in outreach and extension in terms of how are we going to address this need for information on this area. This one really tries to break down what are your priorities for traits on selecting bulls. So indicate how important each of these traits or visual characteristics of a bull are when deciding to use him in your AI breeding program to produce seed stock bulls or to breed to your commercial cows if you're a commercial producer. So there's growth, carcass, reproduction, feed efficiency, lifetime productivity like stayability, hide color, visual appearance, disposition, milk production, price, and calving ease or birth weight. And then people ranked them as very unimportant, unimportant, important, or very important. And what I did is I just summarized these two columns, producers that said it was important or very important, and then we also asked them to identify which was the most important. So just real quick, any guesses here on, let me show you this one first. Bull traits considered important or very important. Growth, reproduction, disposition, calving ease, 95% of the producers indicated one or two of these things. The really interesting things to me are the ones on the lower side. Visual, or what we also said, hide color, is it's still about 80%, but it's lower than these other ones. That's interesting in the fact that, you know, the demand for black-hided bulls, for instance. But I think when a producer goes to a sale and they're all the same color, that's not really a selection option at that point. You've already made that decision when you went to the bull sale. So that was a little lower. The other interesting one was price. Was quite a bit lower than I thought it would be. I thought it would have been one of those higher things that most people would make a big selection decision based on price. But any guesses when we ask producers to say, what's your most important trait out of these, which one do you think it is? Calving ease. And why do you guess that? It is calving ease, Lee. But he saw the slides an hour ago, so he was let in on the deal. But, well, the other interesting thing is, what breed did we send this to? Red Angus. And what has probably put Red Angus on the map, at least initially, and they really focused on heavily calving ease or birth weight. So it's an interesting population of producers. The other interesting thing is those four other traits popped up. Growth is the most important. Reproduction, disposition. Notice the scale has changed quite a bit here. If I back up a slide, you know, all of these are around the 80 to 95%. Now we're in a lower percentage here because this is the most important trait. So far and away, calving ease was most important. But interestingly, price was fairly low in terms of most important. Milk production didn't really surprise me being low, that the visual or color sort of came in low again. I thought that was interesting to me. Feed efficiency was not maybe higher than it is on here. And then the other one is, what is one area that we probably have some of the relatively newest EPDs on is reproduction, even though we all know it's very important on cow-calf producers. So they still, in my mind, really seek more information or genetic prediction on reproduction, which is starting to happen with stayability, heifer pregnancy, some of those things. So we also asked, with the information available to you today, what traits or tools do you or would you select for or use in order to improve feed efficiency? Mature body size, growth, body condition, genetic variation among breeds, maternal traits, genetic markers, actual measured feed efficiency, maintenance energy or something similar like the dollar EN value with American Angus Association, none or other. And the interesting thing was there are producers who are, and actually a fairly high percent, that say that they're selecting, in their mind, they feel they're selecting for improved feed efficiency via some things that we would sort of, that would make sense, mature body size, body condition score. Those are some of the things that go into the maintenance energy EPD. Growth rate, they do select in there. Interesting thing to me, variation by breed or among breeds was really not that important. And to me, that's there's going to definitely be some breed effects that will be beneficial for some breeds, probably not for others. Maternal is an important one, and again, a little bit of that goes into the maintenance energy EPD. Genetic markers was interesting. It was at that rate. I didn't think that there was that much use of the genetic markers going on, but apparently there is. The one that's really confusing is this actual feed efficiency, nearly 50%. And I don't know even how to explain that, because the number of the percentage of producers measuring feed efficiency on an individual animal basis is, you know, in the single digits, I'd have to assume. So not really sure what that one's about. The EPD, like maintenance energy, there's quite a few of them using that as well. So now we wanted to sort of get a sense of what do they know about feed efficiency, and we didn't try to bias it to RFI or really get them to do a test, you know, what do you really know about RFI, but we used some general questions. How knowledgeable are you about the feed-to-gain ratio, or what Dr. Hill had mentioned earlier? Or the second question right after that was, have you heard of the term residual feed intake before? And we defined it here, which took about a month to define RFI in two sentences. But we felt like it was pretty fair to do that. So we basically asked them, how knowledgeable are you about feed-to-gain ratio, and have you heard of RFI before? No knowledge of the feed-to-gain ratio, a little over 10%. Limited knowledge, about half. Knowledgeable or very knowledgeable, somewhere around 30-35%. And then awareness, meaning they have heard of RFI at some point in their life, is about a third of the producers. So that's interesting. I mean, it's good that they've heard of it, but only a third of them have heard of it. And this is also a year ago, so that's probably changed some since then. But, you know, to me it says that there's still even not that great a knowledge about the feed-to-gain ratio, and they don't even probably even have a clue what RFI is. They've just heard of it about a third of the time. So, again, a pretty good indication some producer education is needed. We did break it out by seed stock, commercial, or combination producers. Have you heard of or are you aware of RFI? And I thought it would be higher among seed stock. It was higher than the other two groups, the ranking there was what I think, but still, we're still looking at 30-40% of producers even having heard about it. Where did you hear about RFI? Breed Association, Journal, University Extension, Veterinarian, that sort of thing. You know, it's a biased population. They get the Red Angus magazine, or at least a big chunk of them do. So that's a big source of information. Scientific Journal's pretty small. These weekly, like Weekly Livestock Reporter, Western Livestock Journal, would be a source. University Extension, makes me feel good that we're at least thought of as a source for information. BAF is pretty low. The Neighbor's not too bad there. The thing that made me really happy was Veterinarians are pretty much the lowest one on the list. And if any of you have looked at any of the NAMS data, no offense, Dr. Moss. My wife's a veterinarian, so. But the interesting thing is, if anybody's looked at any of the NAMS data, that National Animal Health Monitoring Service or system data, and if you ask a producer, where do you get nutrition information, you would think it'd either be Extension or maybe a consultant or something. It's veterinarian, number one, pretty much for nutrition information. So it's good to at least know we've got a little bit of an advantage over veterinarians and something at some point. But I've got a follow-up on that here in a minute. We'll hit that again. We just kind of went on a fishing trip on this willingness to pay aspect. And we've got some economists working with us, and they're like, well, you know, you can ask people what they're willing to pay for, but, you know, in reality, they don't ever do it. And country of origin labeling, to me, is a pretty damn good example of that being the case. But we thought, well, let's try it. And approximately how much more per bull would you be willing to pay for if the bull has been evaluated for RFI in a 70-day post-weaning test? We just kind of, instead of leaving it an open number, since Lee Leachman probably put about $10,000, we tried to keep them in some sort of rational list here. $0, $1 to 100, that sort of thing, more than $450. So any guesses in terms of the, go ahead, Lee. I won't even comment on that. So, in terms of what producers said that they would pay for a bull if he was evaluated for RFI, a little less than 30% said nothing more. But interestingly, about 40 to 40-some percent said, I'd pay $1 to $200. Granted, that's a huge range. But you've even got about 25% of the producers down here saying, I'd pay more than $200 per bull if he was evaluated for RFI. We're looking to drill down into this a little bit more and to do some follow-up surveys and some face-to-face evaluations and try to truly get what producers are willing to pay. But I think it's encouraging, if we are going down this road in terms of collecting a lot of phenotypic data, that there is demand out there, even though it's maybe not the number one priority in this population. The other question we asked was, how much more, and this is for seed stock producers only, how much more would you pay to have bulls evaluated for RFI? And so we said the same scale here, zero all the way up to 450. And about 30% said none, same as all the population. But most of them, about 50%, said $1 to $100. And, you know, there's probably a lot of them that would pay $2 and they wouldn't pay the $100. So, again, that's fairly large ranges. But, you know, there's not really any desire to pay up around over $200. But if we back up here again, look at this other graph. These are producers willing to pay for a bull that's been evaluated. You know, there's some value out there, some funds available to try to fund these producers who are willing to pay that $1 to $100 or up to $200 range for that information. So again, we asked just a general question, what is your preferred source of information? Not where did you hear about RFI, but where do you like to get information from? Pretty much the same options here. And Dr. Moss, I'll be happy to say you're back in the running here, second or third or fourth with everybody else. But again, the take home to me, Breed Association magazines, these weekly publications, University Extension have all done well in terms of being a source of information. But all kidding aside, veterinarians, I think, could be a great group for us to try to educate about some of these selection decisions, in addition to Extension. And we've already thrown around some ideas of doing train-the-trainer types of events with Extension personnel, and we probably should do veterinarians at the same time. So the last thing, and this is the one I have the least amount of data on, because honestly it's a very complex regression analysis that a social scientist does it a wholly different way than we would do in animal science. But this is simply predicting someone's awareness of residual feed intake. And anything that's in yellow was statistically significant at the 0.05 level or more significant. So really the things that that drove a producer to be aware of RFI was if they were a seed stock producer, if they managed the ranch longer, so producers who had been managing a ranch longer, age was highly significant, If they read articles or attend meetings, highly significant. And then this is another thing I didn't cover, but just where they got information from was significant. Things like the size of the operation really didn't matter. Region of the country didn't matter. I thought that was interesting, so that's encouraging. And then also the fact that, do they rely on the breed association for leadership? That was not significant. So it's really a lot of producers that are sort of gaining this information on their own. So just last couple of slides here. In terms of how we're going to use this information, or what's our directive after we generate both this information and some of these research results. We're doing some traditional outreach materials like field days, symposia, also internet-based outreach. There's something called eextension.org. And again, USDA, if you are able to get funds from them through outreach, you get brownie points in your grant if you use eExtension, which is a USDA-funded project. This is just, for instance, the beef cattle community of practice. I know it's too small to see, but interestingly, I pulled it up in the hotel room, and whatever state you're in when you log on to the computer, it brings up that state's land-grant university. They're supposed to actually have logos up there. It's not quite at that point. But you can have on here frequently asked questions about a variety of things, but we're going to have these specific to feed efficiency. Ask an expert, so people could email in. The biggest question is, who's going to get stuck reading all those emails? So I'm thinking Dr. Hill is going to have to sort them right off the bat. But if we do that right, we can actually use those to feed our frequently asked questions database. Fact sheets, and then educational modules on this site as well. So this is sort of the direction of some of the basic outreach online. Then the other things we're going to do are some of these train-the-trainer events, as I just mentioned, and then popular press or peer-reviewed fact sheets. One of the things that those of us in the West are involved in is something called the Western Beef Resource Committee Yellow Book. It's this 230 fact sheet book that's annually updated and peer-reviewed, also available on a CD. And so we actually have a fact sheet in there about selecting for feed efficiency. But the idea would be to generate some of these materials for distribution. So some quick summary points, and I will say this is preliminary data. We're just getting through it. I'd hope we'd get it probably summarized by this summer and into a journal article, hopefully in the Journal of Animal Science. To me, the take-home messages are producers still use and seek raw data ratios and EPD data, but demand for genetic marker data versus what's currently used is substantially larger than for other types of data. That truly is the next horizon of data types or type of data that producers are seeking. Reproduction, disposition, calving ease, and growth are highest priority traits for bull selection. Things like price, visual traits, milk, and then possibly feed efficiency are generally not the highest priority. I wouldn't say they're low priority, but producers pretty much said that they're not their highest priority traits. Knowledge of the feed-to-gain ratio is widespread but diverse. RFI awareness is moderate, 30 to 40%. Other preliminary data indicate breed associations, weekly publications, and extension are strong sources of RFI information. About 30% of producers won't pay more for a bull with RFI data. About 40% will pay $100 to $200 a head, and a quarter will pay over $200 a head. Among seed stock producers, 30% won't pay any more, so it's, again, that same rate between both groups. But 60% will pay $100 to $200 a head, and then 5% will pay greater than $200 a head. So I think there's definitely a demand possibly at that level, but at the end of the day, there's really not much desire by a seed stock producer to be willing to pay at that level to get it done. And age, years, managing, and participation in meetings are drivers of RFI awareness. Operation size and region are not. And I think a good take-home, at least from coming from the extension business, substantial producer education is needed, and I think we'd all agree on that. Even after sitting through yesterday and today, I'm still myself in need of great producer education train-the-trainer education about some of these more marker-assisted selection types of things we're looking at. So, having said that, just acknowledging Red Angus Association, Idaho Cattle Association, and then USDA funding, and I'd be happy if anybody had any questions, email me, or if we have time for any right now.
We'll go ahead and